Chapter 22. It isn't until I'm close to Auntie's that my phone connects with a cell tower across the river. I burst into the house, talking to the 911 operator. "No, she doesn't have a pulse. I told you, she's dead." My aunt comes running from the laundry room, wide-eyed with concern. "Heather Noden, washed up, Lake George, down by Duck Island." I gesture to the phone, telling Auntie, "I've told her twice now." I shout into the phone, "I didn't need to take her pulse because she was already dead." Auntie grabs my cell phone. With her other hand, she yanks me into half of a bear hug. "We'll meet the police at the caretaker's cabin," she says into the phone before flipping it shut and tossing it on the kitchen island. Auntie's other arm wraps me tightly. They do this to calm cows at slaughter. My first year playing hockey for Coach Bobby, he brought me home from an away game. We listened to an NPR interview with Temple Grandin, a scientist who has autism. She invented a squeeze machine for cattle processing that also relieved her own sensory overstimulation. Mom came outside to check on me when Coach's car remained parked in the driveway and I still hadn't exited. I had wanted to finish listening to the interview. Coach Bobby rolled down his window when Mom approached. "No worries, Grace. She's safe with me." Four cop cars are followed by an ambulance. Auntie grips my hand as we lead half a dozen cops and two EMTs along the shoreline. TJ is among the law enforcement officers. When I recognize the boulder the raven showed me, I stop and point. "There. I don't want to smell her again." Auntie and I walk back to the small clearing by the caretaker's cabin where the cars are parked. We sit against the front bumper of her SUV. I focus on the late afternoon sunlight still above the tree line and make a point of ignoring TJ when he approaches us. "What were you doing out here?" Officer Keywaden asks me. I lean forward and throw up on his police boots. Auntie pours water on a paper towel and wipes my clammy forehead. She hands me a second towel. I wipe my mouth. I take deep breaths as she hands damp paper towels to TJ. "School assignment," I say finally. "Plant morphology." "Can you radio someone to call her mother?" Auntie asks him. "Shit, Mom will freak out." "Double shit, I forgot to notify Jamie or Ron about this, but maybe Heather isn't connected to the investigation." "I got some Molly V. You and your new boyfriend can go all night long. Got other stuff too, if you want." "I need to call my boyfriend." I cough on the word. "Your brother's teammate?" TJ's jaw clenches. I nod and dry heave. Officer Keywaden doesn't take any chances. He backs up and walks away. For once, I don't resist when my mother insists on taking care of me. I know she's serious as a heart attack when she skips Sunday Mass and her daily visit with Grand Mary to watch movies with me all morning. It's kind of annoying, though, when she keeps hopping up from the recliner to top off my dainty teacup of never-ending chamomile. Each time she does it, my flash of irritation at her hovering is replaced with guilt for being selfish and ungrateful. I'm not the only brat in our house. Harry naps on my flat chest. Her tuxedo coloring, mostly white with a few black spots, makes her look cute. It's an effective disguise because she is a demanding little pest. If I pause too long from stroking her silky fur, she bites at my fingers. My cell phone buzzes once. Harry gets pissed when I stop petting her to flip it open. "Jamie." "Call?" "Me." "No, come over." Last night I called Jamie, long enough to provide a recap of finding Heather before my mother interrupted with an offer to run a bath for me. She hasn't let me out of her sight since. When the movie ends, Mom asks what I want to watch next. "Hocus Pocus," I say. "Is that a good choice? Doesn't it have..." Her voice drops to a whisper. "Dead people?" "It's fine, Mom." I roll my eyes and instantly regret it when she blinks, hurt. I push Harry off me and rise quickly. My arms go around Mom the way Auntie held me tight yesterday. Something breaks my heart when her tense shoulders shake. This is how we've always been. Grandmary was like Harry. She pushed me, and I could push back, confident in knowing exactly where the limits were. As with Harry, my formidable grandmother and I nipped at each other. Not enough to break the skin, but just enough to get a point across. But my mother is always moving the lines so that I never know what will make her crack. All I know is that her fragile emotions are like pond ice during spring thaw. When she stops crying, I kiss her cheek. A friend is coming over. Is that okay? You met him. Jamie, we are more than friends now, I babble. Mom's conflicted emotions are so easy to read. Surprise, happiness, concern. I answer her unspoken questions. Jamie is a good person, Mom. Very respectful of me and all I've been through. I let go of her and take my teacup to the kitchen sink. I rinse it out and set it upside down in the dish drainer. I need to talk with Jamie, which won't be possible if Mom is filling teacups and making a batch of cookies for my friend. Would it be okay if I have some privacy? I ask gently. Again, her anxious face reads like a script. No, yes, no, okay. I'll fold some laundry and ride the exercise bike, she offers reluctantly. When Jamie arrives, my mother greets him with a hug. She asks if he's nervous about next weekend's season opener, and he admits that, yes, he is very anxious. Mom makes her polite retreat to the basement. As soon as I hear the television in the family room, I look at Jamie and put a finger to my lips. He watches with a bemused expression as I go to the bookcase to retrieve the baby monitor sensor that will convey all upstairs sounds when my mother is in the basement. I move it to the antique armoire that has been retrofitted to hold the television and DVD player. Mom will either listen to Hocus Pocus or shut off the baby monitor receiver downstairs. Donis, secret squirrel extraordinaire, is a sneaky ajidamu. I motion for Jamie to follow me as I tiptoe down the hallway. When I reach my bedroom, he's not directly behind me. He got sidetracked by the multiple oversized frame photo collages along the way. The life story of Donis Lorenza Fontaine. I bat at his arm the way Harry does when she wants me to pay attention to her. Jamie hones in on a picture of 7-year-old me looking miserable in a sequin pink figure skating outfit, tight as sausage casing. Finally, I have to drag him into my bedroom. Jamie eyeballs my room. He pauses in front of the dresser. A framed photo shows Lily and me dressed up for Halloween as two of the sister witches from Hocus Pocus. She thought it would be funny if I was the glamorous sister, so I wore the blonde wig. Harry jumps onto the dresser and nudges Jamie's hand to pet her. Who's this? He asks while rubbing behind Harry's ears. Harry. Harrington, actually. She's named after NASA astronaut John Harrington, who is a member of the Chickasaw Nation and was the first Native American to walk in space. I keep babbling. Did you know that John Harrington brought an eagle feather to the International Space Station? I didn't. That's really cool, he says. Harry purrs loudly, approving of Jamie's nimble-fingered technique. I nearly forget why I invited him over. So, I didn't mention it before, I whisper. Heather offered me ecstasy mixed with Viagra at the bonfire. Weed, too. You're supposed to tell me things right away. Jamie quietly admonishes the Donis in the mirror above the dresser. Not a week later. I didn't think it was anything, but now I do. Her death wasn't suspicious, according to Ron. Drowning in September, washing up on Duck Island? How is that not suspicious? The gold-framed mirror makes us look like a photograph. I turn my back to the dresser. She used to be Heather Swanson, I say. Everyone knew her dad was Joey Noden, but he denied it. Supposedly, he threatened Heather's mom when she asked for child support. But once the casino opened and the tribe started paying per cap, Joey claimed paternity and enrolled Heather in the tribe. People say Joey paid her mom's shady boyfriend to set her up for a drug bust so she would lose custody. The custodial parent gets the kid's minor money. Jamie raises the eyebrow on the perfect side of his face. I keep whispering. I told you before that per cap can be good or bad, depending on how it is used. There is a lot of good things about per cap. Auntie buys back land on Sugar Island that got sold to the Zaganash during hard times. He says nothing. But when it comes to the worst aspects of per capita payments, everyone mentions Heather. Auntie said her case led to tribal council amending the tribal enrollment code. There's a process now for non-tribal members claiming their babies are tribal. DNA tests to establish paternity right from the start. Jamie interrupts me. DNA tests can tell you what tribe you're from? Shh. Finger to lips again. He turns to me. Awfully close. I move a step away and keep talking in a low voice. You're thinking of those bullshit ancestry tests where you mail your spit in a test tube and they say you're 18% Native American. Those tests are imperfect. They generalize results to geographic regions, not specific countries or tribes or bands. People take those tests and think they can enroll in a tribe. It doesn't work like that. He frowns. Jamie works undercover, going into tribal communities and playing a role. I never live anywhere long enough to find out what normal feels like. Is it possible that whoever he really is, he has no community? I could tell him what I know, share information that isn't about the investigation, but might be of interest to whoever he is behind his shield. Paternity tests use any type of body fluid to extract DNA to compare the child to the father or his siblings. The tribe requires a blood test. They were going to require hair instead until some of the traditional pipe carriers reminded everyone about the violent history of our hair being taken from us. Scalps that were cashed in like animal pelts and boarding schools cutting children's hair as soon as they were taken from their families. When council debated using blood for the testing, that got heated too. Some said too much blood had already been spilled, but there were others who talked about blood memories. It wasn't just generational trauma that got stored in our blood and passed along, but our resilience and language too. So the tribe voted for blood as the way to help children reestablish their blood connection, and for adults who got adopted out to find their way back to their family. Jamie isn't looking at me anymore. He's at my desk now, staring out the window as he absentmindedly pets Harry. His mind is elsewhere. I've bored him with my impromptu speech. Everything you always wanted to know about DNA, but were too afraid to ask. Maybe he wasn't curious after all. Anyway, council tried fixing it so no one else would go through what Heather did. You knew her, so I don't want to say anything bad, Jamie says. He turns from the window. But evidently, running off without telling anyone and having a bag of weed and one full of pills and crystal meth in her hoodie pouch wasn't out of character. I don't care about that. She deserves to have someone give a damn. Now he is the one raising his finger to his lips. Something pulls me away from the red-hot flare of anger. What he just said about the contents of her hoodie pouch, could it be a clue? Jamie, there wasn't any meth in the bag she showed me, just speckled pills. I want to join Jamie in talking with Ron about the drugs found on Heather. You had a traumatic experience yesterday, Donis. Take it easy today. Jamie whispers in my ear as I pick up the baby monitor to return it to the bookcase. I cover the microphone part just in case Mom is listening. Don't tell me what to do. He pinches the bridge of his nose and heads to the front door. I fight the urge to throw the damn baby monitor at him. Following behind, I catch up as he reaches his truck. Just as I do, Macy's royal blue Corvette turns onto my street. You two need to establish relationship patterns for people to observe, Ron said. Did I think to pray for Jungadewin today? No, because why would I need bravery to stay home all day with Mom and Harry? I offered Sema this morning and prayed for Zagadewin, for Heather Noden. To know love is to know peace. I wish that for her in the next world, because I think it eluded her in this one. I embrace Jamie from behind. His body goes rigid. My arms circle his waist and hold him in an impromptu squeeze machine. Macy's car is coming. We gotta make this look good, I say quickly. He smells like the beach and sunshine. Jamie gives a casual wave to the passing car. I kiss the side of his neck. The pulse of his carotid artery beats against my lips. And that, Macy Manitou, is called acting. Jamie leaves. Mom stands at the door weeping. Sighing, I go inside to decipher her tears and figure out how to comfort her. Reading people was something Lily and I had in common. My best friend said that when she lived with her mom, Lily could tell within 3 seconds whether Maggie's latest relationship was good or bad, assessing the situation to determine if she needed to be funny Lily or invisible Lily. I thought I could relate. Mom carried herself differently on sad days, still mourning her relationship with my dad. I'd need to comfort my mother, make tea, give hugs, and watch a lighthearted movie together. It's kind of the same thing, I told Lily. No, it's not, she said. Your mom never took it out on you when a relationship ended. It takes all of 5 seconds from the driveway to the front door to discern Mom's mood. Observation. Tears, but without her sad day's slouched posture and a wistful half-smile. Diagnosis. I'm growing up, and Mom wishes my uncle were here to see it. Prescription. Hugs. Sympathy. Suggest a nap afterward. And tea.
David won't be here to walk you down the aisle, Mom says.
I resist the urge to tell her, holy wah, I'm 18 going on 19. Instead, I hold her until she's done crying.
Mom, why don't you lie down and I'll bring a cup of tea, chamomile.
While my mother naps, I try finishing the movie. It's no use. I'm too fidgety. Harry nips my fingers because I'm ruining her plans to nap on my chest. My mind won't stop racing. Jamie and Ron are communicating with the FBI to find out everything that was on Heather, a complete inventory. Meanwhile, I have to stay home, be a useless secret squirrel. Work the problem, Donis. Uncle David taught me to think like a scientist. It wasn't enough to make haphazard lists. You needed to sequence the order of tasks. I miss him. Not just because Mom was as carefree as she could ever be around her little brother, but because he was good and kind. He loved me and my boundless curiosity. Once, Grand Mary grew weary of my endless questions over Sunday dinner.
Curiosity killed the cat, Donis, Grand Mary said.
Yes, but satisfaction revived her. Uncle David scored the equivalent of a hockey snapshot. Quick, more about surprise than power. I can't talk about the investigation with Auntie or Granny June. Uncle David would understand. He'd help me work the problem. He taught me the 7 steps of the scientific method. Observe, question, research, hypothesize, experiment, analyze, conclude. Order from chaos. Organize and document everything, Donis. That's it. I stand so quickly that Harry flees from my eureka moment. My uncle logged every experiment, each step of his beloved scientific method. He filled notebooks with his messy handwriting, the only part of him that was not meticulous. Uncle David went missing before he could provide any evidence. He discovered something he wasn't supposed to know. That's why he isn't here. I'll trace his footsteps, but carefully. Curiosity killed the cat, but satisfaction revived her.